Today, we share with you our interview with John Madden. He passed away recently at the age of 85, but boy, was he an iconic figure in sports, not only as a former player, but also as a coach who won a Super Bowl, the first for the Oakland Raiders, and then went into broadcasting for a number of years, and of course was iconic because his face was on the name of Madden Football.
Really, John Madden needs no introduction at all. I think most of America, unless you've been hiding under a rock the last decade or so, knows who John Madden is. The thing I like about John is he's no different as a broadcaster than he was as a coach. I used to love to watch him on the sideline. I used to love to talk to him up at training camp. And he brings that same enthusiasm, that same insight, and that same fun look at football that he did when he was coaching it. John, how are you tonight?
Very good, Ron. How are you?
You know, you've been a part of this for such a long time, and yet I remember those early days when you were in the broadcast booth. I didn't know whether you were going to make it or not. Do you surprise yourself about how successful you have been?
Yeah, probably, because I never really thought about it. You know, I mean, I was lucky that I started out, and I started out doing like the seventh or eighth game that didn't go very far and wasn't watched by a lot of people, and there were no critics watching it, and the bosses in New York, I don't even think they watched it. So I kind of had like a minor league experience, and you know, some of these guys today, where they, you know, get out and they're with the A team or they're doing primetime football or something, and it's their first year, that's tough. And I never had to go through those things, so I just, you know, got on and did it, and you know, got a lot of time in before anyone ever knew that I was even doing it.
One of the things, John, that has made you so successful, at least in my estimation, is because I knew you as a coach with the Oakland Raiders, you really did not change as a broadcaster than what you were as a person. And I think that that made people around the country be able to relate to John Madden a little bit better. Is that unique? Do you think that people try to be broadcasters instead of being real people like you are?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably something to that. I never, you know, like you said, did you ever think that would ever happen? Heck no, I never thought about it. And probably had I thought about it, it wouldn't have. I've never felt that I was a television guy. I mean, I've always felt that I'm a football guy that does television, and I really don't know much about television, and I haven't, you know, learned the intricacies of the industry, you know, as you would. And it's just that I know football, and I have a passion for football and the players and the coaches and the game, and that's what I do. So I've tried to really keep up with the play and the players and the game and those types of things, and I haven't paid a heck of a lot of attention, to be honest to you, to the industry.
Pat Summerall was here on the show, and we were talking about athletes, about when he played and athletes today. I want you to hear what he had to say about the difference between them. Here's Pat.
A lot of things have changed. It's a long time ago since I played, and I think the athletes, no question, today are much, much better. I think it has to do with diet. I think it has to do with the rewards at the end. I think coaching has improved tremendously over the years.
Have you been amazed, John, at the evolution of the professional athlete?
Yeah, and like Pat says, I mean, they're better, they're bigger and stronger because, you know, of diet and training. They stay in shape year round. The coaching is better in that there's so many more of them, and you know, and they use computers and stuff that, you know, we didn't use. I mean, the game is getting very close to perfection, but the one thing that they really haven't perfected yet is having enough quarterbacks. You know, all the rules for football generally go towards the offense, specifically towards the passing game, and that puts, you know, a bigger burden on the game and the guys, and there's not enough guys to go around. I mean, you could count on two hands a number of quarterbacks in the NFL that can play the game the way they've legislated it now.
You know, you had a team, of course, that had a lot of great personalities, and yet for some reason, John, when I look around sports today, maybe it's just because of the money and it's become big business, I don't see those type of players with the personalities, the fun type of guys anymore.
You know, I was talking to someone about that same thing today, and I don't know if it's because they make more money and you know, the way things are today, they don't go out in public as much. They don't communicate with the fans as much, but they don't even communicate with each other as much. I know when, you know, when we used to practice, At least I used to think. I mean, maybe my players will tell you it wasn't any fun, but I used to think it was fun. And, I mean, practice was fun. We'd have some laughs. You know, you were around there, and you know, we'd have some laughs. We'd have some laughs after practice. The games were fun. And now I go to some practice, and I'm not one of those guys that say, well, it was a lot better in the old days, but it just seems like to me that no one is having fun at what they do anymore.
Do you see also that widening gap, as I do on here, this national show, between the fan, the sport, and the athlete?
Well, yeah, I think that's happened, and I don't know if it's because the players are making so much more money that they're not living in the communities anymore, or it's just hard to go out. You know, I mean, people used to go out all the time. I mean, you'd go out to dinner, you'd go out to, you know, clubs, you'd go out, you'd be out in, you know, in town, and the fans and the players would go to the same places, and you just don't see that anymore. And I'm not sure why it is, but I don't think it's only in sports. I think it's in everything where you know, the people just don't mingle like they used to.
I'll tell you what, we had two of your former players in here one night. Now, you can just picture this. George Atkinson and Jack Tatum were sitting in here.
Yeah, they were two good ones.
Oh, boy, they were good ones. But you should have heard them go back and forth. They were telling stories. They were telling stories about you, how they used to play tricks. The team used to play tricks on you up at training camp.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, they probably did. I was too stupid. I didn't even know they were. I remember they used to always kid George about being from Morris Brown.
Yeah.
You know, and Jack used to say, you know, that he was from a university, Ohio State University. Skip Thomas was from USC, and George was from Morris Brown College. It wasn't even a university.
Also, you had another interesting personality as well, and I wonder if you could talk a little bit about him, and that was Ted Hendricks.
Well, you know, I mean, there was only one. He was, you know, a lot of guys try and be a free spirit, and I don't know, in my lifetime, I've met maybe two or three people that were truly free spirits. And one of those guys, and if you just said that word association thing, free spirit, who would you think of? It would be Ted Hendricks. I mean, he's the most free-spirited guy that I've ever known. I mean, he was a guy that had great talent as a football player. He was a guy who could have fun and still play the game as well as anyone's ever played it. In fact, you know, I mean, he did it. He did it his way, and he's in the Hall of Fame.
How then, John, because you hear coaches talking about disruptions on teams, but yet you had a bunch of guys that were free spirits, went about, did everything, but when they put on the helmet, when they walked on the field, they were all business.
Well, they knew that. I mean, that was a part, and that was the discipline that they had. You know, I mean, a lot of people, you know, they put a lot of rules. We only had three rules: to be on time, pay attention, and play like heck when, you know, the game comes. And there was nothing else. And some teams had, you know, dress codes, and their sideburns couldn't be darned so far, and they couldn't have any facial hair. They couldn't have, and we never had any of those things. And I didn't figure that had anything to do with discipline. You know, discipline was from the time the ball was snapped until the whistle blew. And, you know, if they did the things then we had a chance. You know, everything was going to be okay. But if they were, you know, I mean, nice and, you know, and polite and dressed in neckties and had, you know, all the crew cuts and all that stuff, and then we got down in the goal line, they jumped off sides, you know, so much for the nice already. You know, I don't need any nice. Stay on side, wait till the ball snaps, then you go.
John, you made the transition to the broadcast booth, and as I alluded to earlier in the broadcast here, it was a natural thing for you, but yet I remember in the very beginning you weren't comfortable with a coat and tie on, kind of. That was not John Madden. As the years have gone along, are you any more comfortable with it, or you just said, hey, I'm going to just be myself?
Well, what I do is there's a coat and tie deal. I bluff it. You see, we're only really on camera, you know, for an opening, and some, you know, and that's only about a minute. So what I do is I wear sneakers and sweatpants, and then I wear a dress shirt and a tie and the blazer, you know, for the on-camera. And then once we're finished with the on-camera, I take off the blazer and the tie, and I got a shirt and my sneakers and my sweatpants on.
Nowhere else would you have heard that, America, but right here on Sports Byline.
First time that's ever been admitted. If they ever took a shot from the waist down, well, they did one of those wide-angle deals, but they ever took a shot from the waist down, well, from the waist up is not a very good package.
I got to tell you, I used to sit behind a desk when I was anchoring sports on television, and I'd be known a couple of times to have nothing but shorts and sneakers on as well, and then a coat and tie. Somehow the outfit did not go together, John.
Yeah, well, I always take the coat and tie off. I mean, the minute that we start that, because really, you know, you think you're on television, and you're on television, but really it's more of a radio thing once the game starts, because, you know, the cameras are always pointed where they should be, at the football field and the players.
One of the special people in life and also happens to be involved in sports as well, John Madden, is with us, and you will take a quick break here. Come back on the other side. I'll spend a couple minutes more with the coach, and then I'll open up the lines around the country and let you chat with him. When we come back and continue with Sports Byline. John Madden has joined us this hour on Sports Byline USA. John, probably everybody in America knows that you get your mileage plus by way of the bus. And as you've traveled across the country, I can just imagine it must be something for people to be watching Monday Night Football, and all of a sudden this bus pulls into maybe a restaurant or a gas station or a bar or what have you, and in walks John Madden to watch a little bit of Monday Night Football. What have you found in your travels about America? Has it been kind of an education in itself?
Well, you know, the thing that I've learned is that people are really nice. You know, as you go across the country and the different places, that I think a lot of times people try and get away or stay out of the public. I think when you go into small towns, that there's people in any town, you know, it's not a problem. I mean, it's not something you shy away from. It's something that I enjoy. And I mean, it's not the type of thing, oh, look, you know, here we are. It's just the type of thing. You just walk in and you just, you know, like everyone else, and you watch a game and get involved. And you know, I enjoy the small towns. I mean, where, you know, like one time we stopped at a small town in Nebraska, and the mayor was pumping gas across the street, and he came over and introduced himself, and the city clerk came out, and she'd made rhubarb pie, and she gave everyone a rhubarb pie, and you know, and the whole town, and those types of things are fun. I really enjoy that, and as you say, we do that a lot on Monday night. You know, we drive until the Monday night game starts, and then we'll find some place where we can watch the game, and then you get to meet a lot of people, and I enjoy the small towns when we do it.
What have you found as far as sports' influence on our society? It seems like it has grown in its importance.
Well, you know, the thing that I know is you always have to be aware of what state you're in, you know, because it's a very regional thing. And, you know, like if you're in Nebraska, you know, and someone says, who's the best team in college football? You better say Nebraska. You know, you're not going to say Miami. You always have to remember where you are. If you're going through Colorado, you better say the Broncos are going to the Super Bowl. John Elway, if you're by Chicago, you better say the Bears. You know, I mean, and so you learn that it's a very regional thing. And I used to, you know, some people would ask, you know, who's the best team? Who's going to go to the Super Bowl? Who's the best college team? Or, you know, that type of conversation. And I would forget where I was, and I would say what I really thought. And then I'd always get in an argument. So I said, I'm not going to argue anymore. So I just remember where I am, and I say they're the best.
I have often told this story, and I don't know whether you'll remember it or not. I think we were going to Cleveland on one of the Raider charters at that time. And at that time, of course, you were coaching the club, and everybody knows how you feel about flying. And I think you came up to the cockpit. And was it the captain who you asked, and I'm just recalling this, that you asked where we were, and he pulls out a Shell road map or something? You did a 180 and headed right back to the seat?
I mean, he could have done that, but I used to, you know, I was never a good flyer, and of course, I'm, you know, claustrophobic. I don't fly at all now, but I used to always go up there to check, you know, because I always thought if they were calm and everything was okay, then I always felt good. And, you know, because sometimes, you know, the plane would start shaking or something. You could just picture them up there. You know, they're all sweating and nervous. And when I would go up there and look, and everyone was calm and, I would think, oh, there's something wrong. And I'd go up and the guys were up there eating or something. I'd think, well, this is pretty good. We're okay.
Mm-hmm. One more question before I let the fans chat with you, and that is, what's the difference between a team that has had frustration and disappointment for a long period of time and been kind of dog meat, and an organization or anyone that have been successful year in and year out?
I think you hit the key word, organization. you know, because everyone has the same draft. You know, they all have the same amount of time to practice and training camp and the same amount of games. And I think the better organizations, the stable organizations where they have the same people there, where they don't fire the coach every other year, where the general manager is the same guy, where the owner is strong and stable and, you know, and supportive of everyone. And I think all those teams that you mentioned all, you know, are very stable organizations and good organizations.
John has joined us this hour, so if you're out there and care to join us, let's kick it off in Sacramento. Robert, go ahead. You're on with the coach.
Yes, Mr. Madden, I'm a big fan of yours.
Thank you, Robert.
Once I wonder if you're having another book coming out.
Any more books?
No, I don't. I had three, and I don't have another one coming out, and I don't know if I ever will. I think that a book is something that you know, an idea has to come up, and you have to live it or do something, but I don't have one planned at all.
Didn't you, John, for a while teach a course at the University of California about football or sports for women or how to enjoy it or something? I'm just going by memory here. Was that something I remember correctly?
Yeah, that was at the University of California Extension, and it was just football. It wasn't for women. It was for anyone. I mean, there were men in there, women in there, college kids in there, and it was really fun. It was an enjoyable experience. It was like on a Saturday in, you know, spring quarter or something like that, and I did it for a couple years and really enjoyed that. I do have, you know, it's interesting. I was listening that Electronic Arts is sponsoring a part of your show, and I do have a football game out, an Electronic Arts, that is doing very well.
Yes, and it also got a very nice write-up, of course, recently in Sports Illustrated. I saw the picture of you, and it is. It's the hottest game going. Roger, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
John Madden.
Yeah.
Why is it the most successful coaches were not the greatest players?
I think because C students are the best teachers. And I think, you know, that if you look at someone that is an A student, they never make good teachers because things came too easy to them. And I think it's the same thing with coaches. I think that the great players, everything came too easily to them, and they never had to learn anything. They never had to learn the tricks. They never had to learn the basics and the fundamentals, and they can't understand the average or below average guy. The guy that was average or below average, he can understand the average guys, and if you get a great one or a genius one, then you don't have to know anything anyway.
Okay, Alexandria, Virginia. Greg, you're on the air with the coach.
Yes, Coach Madden, it's a pleasure talking with you.
Yeah.
I have two questions for you. First of all, how did you deal with George Blanda's retirement? I recall the time George wanted to keep on kicking forever.
Well, that was a tough one. That was one of the toughest things that we had to do. I mean, and we probably should have kept him another year. I mean, he was probably right. He wanted to, and we thought that we had to start going in another direction with a young kicker, and we did, and George had to retire. I mean, he was like, you know, 39, 40 years old anyway, or 49, 50 years old, I mean.
Right.
And it was time to get on, but he was still a great competitor. Of all the players that I ever coached or ever saw, George Blanda was the greatest competitor that I ever knew.
Yeah, that 70 season was just remarkable.
I mean 70-71, 72, he was amazing.
Yeah, one other question. You mentioned Ted Hendricks is one of the all-time great free spirits. You had another guy by the name of Chip Oliver who quit football to join a hippie commune. Did he ever straighten out, or is he still around? Or
I don't know. You know, he. I mean, there was a guy who was a heck of a player, Chip Oliver, and then, you know, he got involved in a commune and that whole thing, and then he lost all his weight. He did try and come back, like a year or two later, and it didn't work out, and, I mean, he just couldn't play anymore. But there was a guy who could really play football.
Yeah, former USC Trojan. You used to have a lot of Trojans out there.
Yeah, right. I mean, I always thought that coming out of high school that USC got the best players, and if they got the best players coming out of high school, then they ought to be the, you know, best players coming out of college. I remember just one story here. We were at the end of the draft. It was the 12th round, and we were looking at basketball players, guys from small colleges, you know, that had East in front of them. I've never heard of a good football college that started with an East. But anyway, we're looking at those kind of guys, and I said, hey, there's guys walking around the USC campus that are better than these guys. So the old guy said, oh, yeah, who? I said, I don't know who, but I'll find out. So I called John Robinson, my friend. He was a coach at USC. I said, hey, John, you got any guys flopping around there that can still play? He said, has Rod Martin been drafted yet? And I said, no. He said, take him. He can play. So I come in, and I said, okay, I got a guy, Rod Martin. So we took Rod Martin in the 12th round, and he played for like 15 years. And he was a Trojan.
Great story, John. Hold on. A quick break here. Back on the other side, more of you and John Madden this hour on Sports Byline.
John Madden with us this hour. Let's go to Kansas City, Missouri. Go ahead, Rick.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Good. Hey, John, I just wanted to say I enjoy your broadcast a lot. You make football fun to watch on TV.
Well, thank you, Rick.
And the other thing I wondered, I remember, of course, back in the old days when you were coaching the Raiders and you come out here and play the Chiefs, and you remember the old bloodbath rivals and everything that was going on. I don't see that going on anymore in football. I wonder what it was going to take, you know, that kind of spirit. I mean, they used to rip helmets off and jerseys and biting and clawing and everything, and that didn't go on anymore, and it was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I remember, talking about that. I don't know. I agree with you. You know, part of it's the merger, and then, you know, they don't play each other every year and this whole scheduling thing. But I think that there ought to be more rivalry games. I mean, I always thought the part of the schedule, they ought to have a couple just called rivalry weekends and just play all those games. But I remember when we used to play Kansas City in old Municipal Stadium. Now, that was a great place. See, I remember they used to have, like, standing room only, and guys would come early. People would come early and grab a piece of pipe that they'd hold on to. And that place would be packed, and that's where we had some of the great games. And after that at Arrowhead, we still had some good games, but I didn't have the same feeling. But when we played there at Municipal, I thought that was a great place.
Yeah, I loved it too. Well, I'll just enjoy you a whole bunch and appreciated talking to you. Thank you now.
Thank you.
You know, one of the things that I think was a trademark of the old AFL were the rivalries. I suppose they had them in the NFL as well. You know, you think about the Eagles and the Giants and also the Redskins and maybe the Giants as well. But I thought that the rivalries that developed, you know, the Raiders against San Diego, the Chargers and Kansas City, even the Pittsburgh Steelers in ongoing years. What was it that made those rivalries between those sort of teams, your team and others, they're so intense?
I think everyone hated the Raiders. I think that was part of the deal. You know, I thought that was normal. I thought it was just because you were the visiting team. And then when I went and coached, I saw that wasn't true. But when we'd go in Denver, wherever we'd go, we'd lead the league in boos. And then when we'd go to Pittsburgh, we'd lead them. And when we'd go to Miami, when we'd play the New York Jets, we had great rivalry games with the New York Jets. Remember when they had Joe Namath and that stuff? Those were some of the great football games of all time. We had rivals with, you know, Kansas City, Hank Stram. I mean, it was like every game was a rivalry game. We never had any of those ho-hummers, you know, that you didn't care about. We didn't get to play too many Tampa Bays.
Go ahead, Al in New Jersey.
Hey, how you doing, John?
Yeah.
It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, nice to talk to you.
You make football one of the best things on TV.
Well, thank you.
Okay. On the instant replay, what's your opinion on that?
I think that was stupid of them to throw it out, because I think instant replay was very good. I don't think the people that were doing it were the best. I don't think the technology was the best. The monitors were too small. They didn't have the right type of thing to run the play back and forth. They used old guys, you know, like retired guys, and I think it was a young person's game, because to look at a replay, you have to stand right up or look right next to the monitor. You know, from the time you were a little kid, everyone said, get back away from the monitor. You know, I mean, get back away from the TV, you'll go blind. And then these guys are old, and the first thing to go are their eyes. So I think that was part of it. I think the system was good, and they just needed some different people doing it and some different technology, because instant replay is not going to go away. I mean, instant replay, television is going to show it. It's going to be on the screens in the stadium. It's going to be in the luxury boxes. It's going to be in the coaching boxes. So everyone is going to see it except the officials on the field. And I think that the fans are going to feel cheated, and I think they made a mistake in not having it again.
Got a lady joining us from Lawrence, Kansas. Mary Lou, go ahead.
Yeah, Coach Madden.
Yeah.
I was wanting to know, I got a 12-year-old son and was wanting to know what's the top 10 best colleges to send him to be a kicker, professional football kicker?
I think he's 12 years old?
Right.
Well, he has to get through high school first.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, he got to be one of the best there. I don't think the only thing that I would say, I mean, first of all, I don't agree that he should just go to the best school to be a kicker. I think he ought to, you know, really do well in high school and then, you know, see where he gets an opportunity to go and where he fits in and, you know, and get an education and all that. But if it boiled down to just being a kicker, I would say if you would go someplace where they play indoors, you know, and then if you play indoors, then you play on artificial turf. If you don't go someplace where they play indoors, I would go someplace where they have artificial turf. And I would go in a warm weather place. I mean, those are the things you'd look for, because the worst thing for a kicker is to kick off mud and or grass into the wind.
That was your true goal. I remember a story I did on you, John, and you said that you had always harbored the desire to be a kicker in the NFL. And we pulled back from the shot, and here you are putting footballs in a kicking machine.
Yeah, that's right. That was the only thing that I could do. I was kicking them out of the machine.
Let's go to San Mateo, California. Dave, go ahead.
Yeah, John, I enjoy listening to you in the morning. I know the rest of the nation doesn't get to pick them up, but there's a couple of things over the past few years I haven't heard much about lately. One was the Bubbas, and the other was seems like we tracked the progress of a Volkswagen limo one day years ago.
Yeah, you know what happened, Bubba. You know, I still got that. That was when, Ron, you know, they started doing all these beautiful bodies and, you know, and Stay Slim and all these Jane Fondas and things, and, you know, I mean, all these exercise videos, and I said, there's nothing for the regular person anymore. You know, you look at the models, they're all real skinny and the thing. And so I started a club, and it was a Brotherhood of United Bad Bodies of America. It was called Bubba. And it was for all those people that didn't have the perfect bodies. Mm-hmm. And I said that we ought to unite, and have them where they have a Bubba poster, where they have, you know, places for Bubbas, you know, that we're people too. That was one thing. The Volkswagen thing, I got the Volkswagen. I finally got here. I bought a Volkswagen limousine in Las Vegas at an auction. And they lost it, and getting it here. And I finally got it here. I kept it for a year, and then I sent it back to the auction and auctioned it off again.
I saw some of those pictures of the people that were in the Bubba's Club. You were right. They were not good bodies.
No. Bad body. That's the club. If you had a good body, you don't need any club. I mean, they got their whole club. I mean, those people that eat stuff that floats up in there. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You need some sinkers. I mean, that stuff you eat, boom, and it goes right down there and gives you a good foundation. That's what the Bubbas believe.
Go ahead, Terry, Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Yes, you tell some funny stories. And what I want to know is, since you were afraid of flying, how could you afford to take all those airplane trips when you were with the Raiders?
Well,
how did you manage those on those trips?
Well, first of all, I got claustrophobia after I got out of coaching, so... when I was coaching, we used to take charters all the time, and it didn't bother me as much, but I was never a really good flyer. Then when I started just traveling by myself, I got claustrophobic, and it happened 3 times, and I said enough, and I'm not going to fly anymore, and that was it.
And just to prove that you are a real person, real things can happen even to John Madden. Now, you were at a golf tournament one time, and you had a pair of pants. I was listening to you and Al Hart here in San Francisco talking about it. Tell everybody around the country what the heck happened to John Madden.
Well, what happened is you know how you're outside, and you're walking down a fairway, and you're kind of feeling air where you shouldn't be feeling air? Well, I was feeling air coming through, you know, the back of my pants. And so I was playing at the time. I was playing with Don Shula and Bob Greasy. And, you know, Don Shula won more football games than any guy in the history of the sport. And Bob Greasy was always, you know, a class guy as a player and a person and a father and announcer and all those things. So there I am. So I feel back there, you know, where the seam is. Because sometimes if you split your pants, you split them usually at the seam. So the seam is intact. So I'm still thinking there's no rip back there. I'm okay. So I'm going, but I'm still feeling this air whipping through the back of my pants. And I'm thinking, you know, there's something wrong here. So I feel, and it's off to the right, and there's a big hole in my pants. So I told those guys, I said, I got a hole in my pants. And they said they knew it because it was the hole, like, right side. And so I couldn't do anything until I got to the turn. So I got there at the, you know, after the ninth hole, and I went in, I got some safety pins. So I tried to pin it back together. And when you have a rip in the back of your pants, you can't get anyone to help you. I mean, Don Shula and Bob Greasy aren't going to stand there and help me. So I'm kind of on my own in this deal. So I'm pinning these pants, and the hole is so big. And when you're my size, you can't go in and buy pants. So I started looking at everyone's pants, and I'm enjoying their pants. So now the guy looks after I pinned my pants, and he said, I don't think that that's going to work. You know, I mean, he said, I'll get you some tape. So he went and got me this real thick electrical tape, you know, the type like 4 inches thick.
Yeah.
So he went and got me that. So in the meantime, Joe Pesci joined us. So I, you know, and the guy comes back just as Joe Pesci's coming up saying hello. He's going to play the back nine with us. I'm coming up and says, I got a hole in my pants and I got to tape him. Now I got this black electrical tape. So I go up there and the 10th tee, I'm teeing off. And Pesci says to me, he said, I thought you said you had tape for your pants. You got your pants pinned and they haven't worked. So now everyone's looking at my pants. So anyway, to make a long story short, now I'm trying to get the tape on. And like I say, you don't have a rear view mirror, so you can't look at what you're doing. You don't, you know, I mean, the guys are friends, but they're not that friendly that they're going to tape the back of your pants that you blew out. So now I'm walking down the fairway and pulling pieces of tape off and just sticking them back there and hoping that I got the whole thing. So I had no idea what the heck I looked like. Then finally, I had a like a windbreaker jacket, and when I left the thing to go back to the hotel, I took that off and tied it around my waist to go through the hotel. Then when I got back to my room and I looked at my pants, man, that was ugly.
Now, can we assume there'll be a John Madden kind of clothing line coming out of this some way, John? There's got to be. I mean, it's got to be money-making somewhere in this.
Ron, there's no money-making in that. That was the ugliest sight that you can ever imagine. And to have the whole right side of the back of your pants with black electrical tape all over it. I mean, that just wasn't a little slip. I mean, this thing went down like in an L shape, you know, and the whole thing. You know, I mean, there was stuff sticking out. It was ugly. I mean, and those guys, you know, how you stand on a tee or you make, you know, everyone has to watch you when you make your shot. So they were kind of friends in the fact that they watched me, but they weren't friends in the fact that they were going to help me do anything about it.
Yeah, you had the worst combination. I mean, you've got, not Marino, but you got Greasy and you've got Shula, and then you've got Joe Pesci, which is like putting gasoline on a fire.
Well, yeah, and they're not going to let me forget. So now I'm looking at everyone's pants, and I'm getting envious of pants that don't have holes in them. And then, I mean, the whole thing, it was like, you know, people say they have an embarrassing moment that I... You know, this was an embarrassment that lasted 4 hours. I mean, this thing didn't go away.
John, you've been a good friend for a long time. Thank you very much for coming in here tonight. A lot of fans around the country wanted to chat with you. Take care of yourself. My best to Virginia, and we'll talk to you down the road, Coach.
Okay, Ron, enjoyed it. Thank you.
John Madden, only one John Madden. You had him here tonight on Sports Byline. See you on the other side with more of Sports Byline USA.